So Texas is crawling its way to the finish line of National Signing Day 2 for the 2018 cycle, with Javon Shepherd being wishy-washy on where he's going to go. But we hope you pretend we're football for the next hour. I'm your host, Will Bazer. I'm joined alongside by Tim Preston and Johnny Brashear, as always. You guys are listening to the Hornscast channel. It's the Hornscast channel right here on iTunes, Podbean, Spotify, Google Podcasts, anywhere you guys can find a podcast. So Texas went ahead and beat Oklahoma in another thrilling game at home. Matthew McConaughey was there to watch it. So we'll go ahead and talk about OU, Matthew McConaughey, and what exactly Texas did to beat the Sooners, then give you guys a preview of the TCU and Georgia games coming up. But before we get into that, let's go ahead and do what we always do and pretend you're getting to know us. So this week's Pretend You're Getting to Know Us is, what obscure piece of information have you been trying to casually mention in the podcast but have not been able of doing so far? So we'll start off with you, Tim, because you've been waiting for this one for about, what, 2 weeks now?
Yep. Yeah, sure. All right, so it might kind of sound weird, but going to high school in Iowa, I actually have had the chance to play, when I was younger, against a number of NBA players. There just happened to be like kind of like this hot pocket of like really good basketball players that happened to come from Iowa, like Ricky Davis and Kirk Heinrich.
Diarrhea pocket.
But tick out of packet placed directly in toilet. But like my game. But regardless, the guy who we played a few times was none other than Iowa Falls native Nick Collison, Mr. Thunder himself. And one time when we were playing, actually we played him in high school a couple times, but also played him in pickup games a couple times with one of my buddies from Cedar Falls. And we were playing in a game, and actually my friend Rich, who's like 6'5", and as a sophomore took second in the state for high jump, so like he's a decent athlete. Rich blocked him, like blocked Collison, and like talked shit. Was like, it's not gonna happen today, Nick.
Choice.
And then Collison dropped like 39 on him. It was like demanding the ball every time. So, like tried to dunk on him. Like once wanted the ball to like hit him or whatever.
So, the nuts of the face hang.
And you know what? Rich was never the same. That dick was never the same. but yeah, played against a lot of NBA players as a bucking youth.
So how did you do against Collison?
Well, I was a wing, of course. We lost.
So not good.
Well, look, sometimes, you know, what I think is fun about sports just in general is sometimes you get pooped on and sometimes you do the pooping, and he shit all over us. He shit all over us. I don't think I ever won a game against any NBA player I played. Really, almost for sure not. But it was fun. It was a lot of fun.
I can't think of any. Oh, I do know. Well, I don't know if he's NFL, but there is one guy who I did play against who was interesting. It was Caleb Jones. Do you guys remember who Caleb Jones is?
Yeah, he's the one who had the punching issues, right?
Yeah, punched the tennis player in the face, broke his jaw. Yeah, I used to play football against him back in middle school, which kind of goes into my little pretend you're getting to know us. Casually try to mention in the podcast I do that I was pretty good at sports back in middle school. I was a regional talent. Went so far that one of my coaches told me that he'd watch me in the NFL. And at that point, I was like, okay, buddy, settle down there. Like, I'm a 5'7" white guy.
Good news, Mom.
But
you're on the Julian Edelman fast track.
Yeah, exactly. That's what. But I was a cornerback. I did like to hit people, but I found out in high school that it's a lot harder to hit guys who are a lot bigger than you. So Caleb Jones was a guy who was actually on our rival team back in middle school, and I tried to date some girl from his school, and that didn't go very well. And all of the boys had, during our game against them, written on like a hit list, and I was like number one on their arm. Like, they all had it in Sharpie, and it was like, kill Will Bazer. And I was like, all right, so this is going to be a fun game.
Did Caleb you enjoy the end of it from the hospital, or?
No, well, yeah. No, he did. I tried to tackle him. It didn't go very well. his
dad,
man. I
bounced off Aaron Campman one time in high school. Like, NFL players are a different breed, man. They're so big.
It was crazy. He was like already 6 foot in middle school. It was insane trying to take him down. But I also tried to hit a guy in eighth grade who went off to play. He was on our team. Went on to play baseball for Vanderbilt and then starred in Everybody Wants Some. He was one of the lead actors in that. He actually, his name is Temple Baker, and he went into that recording trying to be a extra in the show for his birthday, and the director was like, no, you, I'm going to make a role around you. You are going to be a character in this movie. So he ended up now in Hollywood doing Hollywood things, but I tried to tackle him in middle school. I think I got a concussion because of that, but...
Is this yours, just so I know? Like, is this...
This is all my stuff, but...
Awesome, yeah. Nice,
all
right.
These are all stories that... I feel like this has completely changed to what famous person did you, like, have 6 degrees of separation with? Yeah, so that's me, is I was once good at sports back in middle school. So, yeah.
I once met Carl Lewis. Does that make me fast? I
don't... Ooh!
No, so my casual thing that I try to mention, maybe not on this podcast, but I try to do it here too. Is that I am friends with the DJ at the Irwin Center, DJ Mel, who
the illustrious,
yes, the illustrious, the Austin Music Hall of Fame. DJ Mel.
Ooh.
He is actually in the Hall of Fame. And I have known him for about 22 years at this point. I first met
Club
him.
Club Irwin.
Yeah. Yeah. He is the, he and his, female counterpart are the proprietors of Club Irwin. I first met him at an illegal field party under MOPAC in 1997.
Yeah, of course you did.
There's actually a photo of it. It's him, like it's the photo is from behind him and it's the crowd in front of him, and I'm over there wearing a black sheep shirt because of course I was. And he's this is about, I don't know, 20 minutes before the cops showed up and pulled us all out of there. But yeah, we have known each other for a very long time. And he is a very good dude. He is a very approachable dude. So if you have things to say to him, preferably positive, feel free to come up to him and talk to him because he's an extremely nice guy. Yes, so that's my casual thing. That's my little bit of starfuckery, is that I know DJ Mel, the most famous 5'2" dude in Austin.
Now, here's a little bit of the difference, though. Like, I have thought a number of times about talking about playing against these guys. It feels like you two buttholes just like rode my coattails in this pretend you get to know us. And
always ride your coattails? Is this not the established pattern?
Okay. So people know us really well then. They know us.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, mine was just kinda like, yeah, definitely riding off your coattails, but I also recognize that it was very, very, very super lame. Like, it was very, very lame, but I was completely riding out the coattails of y'all. But yeah, I mean, like, I don't know. I feel like I drop hints that, like, I used to be good at sports, but it was,
yeah, no, you've done
way
that before.
Way, way, way back in middle school. I have no leg to stand on.
I like sports. They're one of my favorites.
Sports ball is fun to watch and play.
Mm-hmm.
You know what's even more fun to watch? Is Texas taking it to Oklahoma again and again and again and again. I will watch that every day and twice on Sundays. It was beautiful. Well, you know, I guess before we get into that, let's go ahead and talk about some Matthew McConaughey here, because we all know that the guy is now the ambassador.
The minister.
the minister of culture. The minister of culture. My apologies, minister. And he wore a very interesting burnt orange suit to the game.
That was like custom, but could have been stolen off of a hobo outside of Studio 54. He threaded that needle quite nicely.
And he proudly displayed it on the bench as a coach. So I want to get y'all's takes on that. And just what are y'all's thoughts on Matthew McConaughey or Coach McConaughey?
You mean like his outfit?
His outfit and just him being on the bench.
I thought he looked nice.
Johnny, I feel like you might have some more feeling on this.
That's fine. We got to put down the mayo before we put the sriracha on top. So go ahead.
I think that there's probably any number of, like, I probably every single school. Okay, we were talking on Inside Texas the other day about how I don't really hate Oklahoma basketball. Like, I hate Oklahoma football. Like, I hate Eduardo Nájera, though, right? Like, I fucking hate that guy. Yeah,
so
he can
much.
Eat every bag of dicks he finds. But like, every team, like, every program has their Nájera, right, that everyone else despises but they love. And, like, I get the impression that, that Texas fans and, like, Texas students are not sick of McConaughey. And I kind of am not either, right? And he's been doing this for a while, but... You know, if he even adds a single iota of good to the team, then it's worth it. And there's just no downside. Like, I just don't see any downside. So, is it a farce? I think probably. I don't really expect him to impact games. But, like, if the players like him and the students get a little bit more raucousy because he's there, or if a few more hot chicks show up because they want to sneak a peek, well, then, all right, good for Texas basketball.
I know he's good, at least for recruiting-wise, because, I mean, I've talked to a few recruits, and, like, one of them, five-star guy, told me, yeah, he was probably the best part of the trip was getting to talk with him.
Yeah, he was taking photos with football recruits and all that stuff. Yeah, no, he's it's weird. I mean, it is objectively weird to have...
It's like USC in the 2004-2005 season, where they just let... like Snoop Dogg and those guys out on the field.
Yeah, but those guys, so okay. It's one thing if you have a football program doing it, because you can, there's enough spare space around a football field that you can set up a section where, like, those guys will be over by the end zone or something, and they're nowhere really near the players. Like, they get the access and maybe they hang around them in pregame, postgame or whatever. But this is like, he's right next to the trainer. Like, he is within arm's reach of the actual players during plays. And
he's in the huddles.
And to be fair to him, it did look like he was an active observer, but not like, he's not calling out for plays. You know, he's not like, oh, Sikowski clear needs a ball to the low block.
I wish he was doing that. That would be amazing.
I have such mixed feelings about this because, on one hand, the whole Minister of Culture thing is just fucking odd. Like, it's one thing if it's like, you know, Kevin Durant, he's put in money and his name is on part of the building kind of thing. That's one thing. But this dude's now, he's not even technically the Minister of Culture yet, right? Like, that's supposed to be the new arena. So he's, I don't know, is he putting in his legwork beforehand so he can method act his way through? I don't know. But it's just really weird that he's on the bench. I mean, I think he was closer than the head trainer. Like, I that's weird. And...
He was in between Roos and Cunningham.
Yeah, well, yeah, and like, so he's closer than the strength and conditioning guy and one of the main trainers, Leif Morris, who he's one of the main trainers. So he's closer in on things than two dudes who are responsible for the literal well-being of the players. And it's just...
well, Well, I mean, McConaughey is responsible for the cultural well-being of the players.
That's right. Yeah, he's over there. Yeah, he's over there, like, you know, uttering a chant. I don't know what he's doing, but it's.
I really want to get Jimmy Guards on the show just for like 5 minutes, just to have him go on one of his McConaughey. You're talking about method acting, right?
Yeah.
Jimmy Guards as McConaughey for 5 minutes would be phenomenal.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so if you're Texas and you're Texas basketball and you are trying to find ways to amp up enthusiasm about the program, I get you want to bring a guy like McConaughey in because, you know, apparently the players aren't doing it for fans, so might as well bring in the A-list movie star. And it's just such a weird thing, right? Like, I'm not wrong that this is really odd. I can't find an analog to this.
Look, he's not going anywhere, so just don't let it bug you. He's not going.
It's
I mean, not
that
you're
bugs
letting it bug
me.
You, right? I hear you. But if there are people out there who it does bug, just like get over it. Like, there's worse things that we can find that are more frustrating.
But you're right. It is weird, and you can tell that it's weird because it's become like a meme of some sort around the nation where this is happening pretty much nowhere else than tech. I mean, not even what's his face the singer for Oklahoma.
Toby Keith.
Like, not even Toby Keith is getting that much level of access at Oklahoma.
Joe Jamela was not in the huddle when Mack Brown was calling plays. You know? Like, this is just such a... Maybe it pays off and it's like a, you know... Like, I do sort of enjoy him telling Hepa to get up and cheer, although I'm sure Hepa's been cheering most of the time and he just wanted one fucking possession where he didn't have to get up off the bench. But it's like, I feel like we're edgy. Like, 10 years from now, we're going to be like, well, fucking McConaughey's now an assistant coach, and I don't know what to do because he keeps calling three-pointers when nobody can shoot. Like, I don't like, he's out on recruiting trips now. I didn't know if that was legal, but apparently it's okay. Like, I don't know what's happening. it's so weird.
This is a quick question. I only spend 2 seconds on this, or 2 minutes on this. Ready? Is there a bigger sports alumni in any sport beside Kevin Durant? Is Kevin Durant the most influential, important, or famous sports alumni at Texas?
Yes.
On question.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. It's not even close. You could have argued that maybe like 10 years ago, like maybe Ricky Williams or Vince Young was for football, but currently it's Durant and it's not close.
Oh, I don't think it'll ever be close again. I mean, like maybe in like 70 years. Or something like that.
Mo Bamba becomes like, you know, as big as Durant or something, then maybe. Because it's, you know, some of it's just the nature of basketball and the fact that these guys are, you know, sort of bigger faces than a lot of their NFL or baseball counterparts, you know. But,
well, Texas football gear, like they're like, you know, like their apparel stuff has KD on the side.
Yeah.
You know, like, so if you're looking for an example.
I mean, KD's name is on other schools' Nikes as well. Like,
yeah.
That's how big KD is.
Right. I guess that makes sense that it is sort of the nature of basketball to be more of a face.
Yeah, especially because, I mean, the only other, you know, the only other ones you could come up with are maybe like Roger Clemens for baseball or something. But that's still like it's.
Yeah.
It's not like KD. Not in terms of mass perception, it's not like KD. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the most noticeable football player over the last 20 years is probably, what, Jamal Charles?
Vince Young.
In the NFL?
Well, yeah. I mean, he's, you know, he's, even with Jamal Charles, like, Vince Young is still the face of Texas football over the last 20 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can appreciate that, yeah. But, I mean, but Charles is the best pro.
Probably.
Well, him or
over the past 20 years,
Casey
Ricky
Hampton,
Williams,
maybe.
No. Ricky Williams is a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, like, Casey Hampton could be.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
but none of them are as famous as Durant.
Right. None of them are as famous as Durant. And that kind of struck me as interesting and weird because you wouldn't have thought that being a football school.
And surprisingly enough, for a guy who spent 1 year here, like he is very much.
Yeah, he reps Texas hard.
Yeah, Texas guy. Like, I mean, I don't think that. I know that Jamal Charles went to Texas because I love Jamal Charles. And I think people that pay attention do, but like a casual NFL fan, like, I wonder where that guy went to college. You know, I don't know that it matters so much with that. So,
right. It's interesting. The guys who come here for 1 year turn into huge Texas fans, like Miles Turner, Mo Bamba. Sure. Jared Allen is secret closet Texas fan because he's secret closet everything.
Yeah.
And then, you know, obviously Kevin Durant is a huge Texas fan. It's interesting. But let's go ahead and get into Texas beating Oklahoma, because why not talk about that? That's amazing. It's awesome. Fun. So let's go ahead and really get down to one of the main problems Texas has had this year, which is finishing out the close games. Texas finally did that against Oklahoma. In the final minutes, they put it to Oklahoma and finally were able to close it out. What happened? How did Texas finally do this? What was the secret formula?
Well, the secret formula was a few things. They actually kind of built a lot of what they did towards the end of the game earlier. This was one of the better games Texas has had lately of attacking the basket and having those, even like the times we didn't score, led to a lot of free throws. I think they took 25 free throws during the game. So we ended up getting to the line a decent amount. We were fortunate enough to get on a broken play, get a huge Febres three kind of late. And then there was that kind of weird, fluky turnover by Christian James where the ball flies off his knee and then off his foot and then out of bounds. You know, I think Febres at the time when he hit that three was 1 for 9 overall. And James had a really fantastic second half. I thought Texas executed pretty well down the stretch. And like I said, they'd done enough early that they were able over the last few minutes to get themselves in a position where they were, you know, take some free throws and get to the free throw line. Oklahoma seemed to only foul guys from Texas that were decent free throw shooters, which is nice as well. But I didn't think it was anything super special in the game, other than we saw Texas kind of sort of stick to their guns, get some timely made baskets, get again a weird kind of fluky turnover, and hold OU back, because what was the name? Bieniemy? Like he came out firing and shot really well at the end. So Oklahoma, I would say, played well enough to win that game down the stretch, but had one weird play, and Texas hit enough shots.
Yeah, and I think it's one of those interesting, like, we've talked some about how the Big 12, the defenses are significantly better than the offenses this year on average. Most teams, their defensive capabilities are better than their offensive capabilities. What you saw during this game was two teams who were pretty evenly matched in a number of different areas. And for one game, the offenses sort of overmatched the defenses a little bit. Like they were played a little better on offense than on defense. You know, both teams averaged over 1.1 points per possession, which is pretty good. Both teams were really good from the free throw line. Texas was the worst of the two in that they shot 80% from the free throw line. And it's sort of an underrated story coming into conference play or going into conference play that Texas as a whole has been very good from the free throw line, but we can get into that some other time. The defense for Texas was not great, but it was good enough. I think you could maybe make an argument that if Jamal Bieniemy doesn't get cramps the last few minutes, maybe this game goes a different way, because he was pretty white hot and he was one guy who could bring them out of the 2-3 zone they were pushing in the second half.
On like fucking pump fake threes. Yeah. Like on weird off balance pump fake threes. Like, okay, dude, you do
yeah,
your thing.
Yeah, to be fair, some of them were pretty high difficulty threes, but he was still hitting it.
Oh, sure.
Great. It's, you know, I was surprised by the fact that Lon Kruger went with Bieniemy over Aaron Calixte to start this game and stuck with him for the vast majority of the game. I don't know why he did that. Maybe there is some practice reason or something, but Calixte has been good enough this year that, you know, a guy like him who is an upperclassman who has seen a lot of games, I feel like maybe he could have been a little more steadying than a freshman who is getting, I don't know how many games Bieniemy started, but it's not a ton. And it's little things like that that make the difference in a game that's that close. You know, I'm happy Texas beat Oklahoma. I'm happy anytime Texas beat Oklahoma. The only time maybe I've ever been happier is watching Oklahoma lose by 44 in a Final Four game. That was pretty awesome. But other than that, this any Oklahoma loss to Texas is a good result.
Yeah, I think it has to be, though, that, like you said, Tim, Texas finally had four of their main guys click. especially Corwin Roach and Dylan Osakowski, two guys who, if you would have asked, I guess you asked us at the beginning of the year, those are the two guys we would have said are probably two of the most important guys on this team, aside from Matt Coleman. Those two guys
I'm definitely on record as being a fan of. I don't know about Tim.
Tim definitely does not like Matt
Coleman. I don't want to talk about it.
Dylan Osakowski getting 15 points. Corwin Roach, 23. Matt Coleman, 15. And Jackson Hayes getting 15 points. Those four guys clicking were probably the reason Texas did well in this game. They were able to overshadow poor shooting from Jace Febres and Courtney Ramey, despite Jace Febres hitting the 1-3 that got Texas ahead. That was his 1-3 out of 6. So, yeah, Texas finally did pretty well with four of the main guys. That is probably the reason Texas was able to stick in this game against a pretty good Sooner squad.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say that if you have those four guys all playing well at the same time, Texas is going to be difficult to beat by anybody, because they all bring different things to the table. And if you have all four of those guys playing well, then you have your best passer, your best rebounder, your best rim runner / get it anywhere near the backboard and I will dunk it guy. And Roach, who is, you know, probably the best penetrator, maybe, out of the group. So you get all four of them together and all on the same page and all playing well, then, you know, Texas is going to be difficult to beat. And they showed it, even with, you know, Ramey not having a good game and Long not having a good game and some of the other guys just not really contributing much.
And they're all, you know, back to week one of our show from this season, right? All three of those guys at this point are 30-minute per game guys, right? So the fact that you're going to have those four guys who are going to play big minutes, I mean, Jackson's kind of the big question mark because of his foul trouble, generally speaking. But the other three guys, game in and game out, they're always getting big minutes, especially as conference play has gone on. But I think even more so than just the fact that they played well, I was very pleased with the situations that they were able to kind of get themselves in. Matt was continually probing with his dribble and getting in there. I think hit three or four floaters. Kerwin, I thought, made really good decisions with his shot selection, moved the ball very well. I actually don't mind him being a high-volume three-point shooter as long as he's doing it off of catch-and-shoot situations, not a whole lot of, okay, dribble the ball down and fire. I thought Dylan was really, really, really good attacking as far as, like, making his decision when to attack. He did a phenomenal job in this game of feeling the help defense. When the help defense was there, he kind of took that extra dribble and then passed out. When the help defense wasn't there, he attacked, and he scored pretty well. Jackson obviously took advantage of the plays that he could. You know, those four guys, it wasn't just they played well, but this is replicable. Like, what they did in this game is something that they can do. Those four guys can do pretty much whenever they want. You know, does Kerwin always hit 3 for 6 from deep? Probably not. But I think Dylan can hit 5, you know, can be decent like that on the interior if he's making good decisions. We know that Jackson can shoot well on his lob dunks. I feel like we've seen enough from Matt to say that his ability to penetrate and get into the lane for some of those floaters is there. That was good. And even more so, like, there have been different games this year where four players have played well, but those four players have not produced at the same time like we did with that. And so, you know, we've talked about what can we absorb if guys don't play well. And Ramey kind of threw in a clunker, right? And Eli was not very good. And Jace shot a lot but was struggling a little bit. And Jericho didn't really give a whole lot. You know, so it was kind of those guys and just about nothing else except for Jace's big three. And we won. You know, we beat a team that played well and had a very good production from a freshman guard who, you know, was trying to will his team to a win, and we still won because those four guys did what they do pretty well.
And especially Corwin Roach, who actually over the past four games, yes, I know, including Kansas and what he did at the very end, has had four pretty good games. Kansas probably is the worst one he has had over these past four games, where he only shot 36% from the field. But beyond that, against Oklahoma State, 18 points, shot 58%. Against Texas Tech, he had 17 points, shot 46%. Against Kansas, 13 points, shot 36%. And last game, he had 23 points and shot 56%. What did they say? One is a coincidence, two is a pattern, three is a trend, or something like that. This seems to be a trend.
I think you got like that from your InfoWars Facebook page, but all right.
Yeah, I think it is. In fact, I'm sure it is. But it it also applies here. This is not a conspiracy. Kuren Roach is back. Call it. I'll put my tinfoil hat on and listen.
So I think when you look at this team, there are a lot of good players who have certain skill sets that have varying amounts of applicability within a given game. But there's only, I'm going to say 1.5 guys, because I'm not quite certain in the second, who can reliably go get their own shot when they need to. And so the ups and downs that you are going to have from Snoop are just sort of something you have to roll with, because his ups are so high when you look at like what he did against North Carolina, what he's done in some of these recent games and getting to the lane, his ability to hit those catch and shoot threes that Tim talked about. Like I would love for him to not do the knucklehead stuff he did at like the end of Kansas, the end of Oklahoma State. That sort of thing is infuriating because it takes off the table a significant amount of what he puts on it, but it's still a net positive with him. And when you can get him in a position to use what he has, what his sort of God-given ability and his what he's worked to hone, he's still the highest ceiling player, not named Hayes, on this team. So. When he has a game like that, you got to hand it to him because he's done something good.
So if you're a Shaka Smart, how do you try to keep these four key guys showing up, or at least four guys a game showing up? What is the key for a coach?
Well, when you look at the way that they've succeeded,
more,
I don't mean to be a broken
record. On the bench.
I got to have more McConaughey, baby. I don't want to be a broken record. It's not super complicated when you consider their strengths. You know, I just think when Kerwin has struggled, it's because he's playing outside of himself. When Dylan has struggled, it's because he doesn't do the things that a big man of his size and his caliber or potential should do. Like, dude, you gotta, every single Big 12 bucket you get, Dylan, you go up strong every single time. There should be 0% you don't do that. Kerwin, we don't need you to pound the rock for 15 dribbles and then shoot a contested spot up three. Matt, we need you to penetrate all the time. If they're doing these things, if they play to their strength, they're going to have a good shot. And I think when we've seen some of the fans and some of the prognosticators and people around Texas basketball get frustrated is we look at what these players struggle with, right? Well, what can't Kerwin do? What can't Matt do? What can't Dylan do? And there's some things, right? There's some stuff that they're going to struggle with. But all four of these guys have some real significant strengths. And if we can start really playing to their strengths, their weaknesses kind of be damned a little bit. Like, their strengths are good enough to win us games. And I'm really feeling, I want to reiterate this, is what they did against Kansas, what they did against Oklahoma, it's replicable. Like, they can repeat this. It's not going to be terrible for us to say, all right, Dylan, this is how you're going to approach each time. This is what you're going to do when you get the ball down low. This is Kerwin. These are the shots that we want you to take. You cannot take other shots than this. All right, Matt, you know how to kind of direct the team and get into the lane. Like that. I mean, of course, Jackson's role has been very similar the entire year. But I think that there's, from Shaka's standpoint, he just has to make sure that I don't think it's questionable that they are told what their roles should be. He just has to find ways to make certain that throughout each game that they get how to function inside of that role, that they're not playing outside of what they do best.
And I think if you see what has been going on since the beginning of the year, their offensive efficiency has continued to climb the charts. For week after week after week, they went from being somewhere around 100 a month ago, month and a half ago. They are now around 40, give or take. And some of it is things like free throw percentage. Some of it is things like their 2-point percentage being better. Some of it is that their 3-point percentage has increased. A lot of it is that they are honing in on what each of them does well, like Tim said, and they are pushing that. Like the offensive playbook is continually being sort of refined and enhanced and tinkered with. And you see that they put up, I'll have to go back and look and see if this is still true, but at the time they put up more points per possession against Tech than anyone else had, which is no small feat considering that Tech has the best defense in the country by a lot of metrics. They went into Kansas and they put up a significant number of points, and that was the closest they have been to beating Kansas in Lawrence since 2011. And some of those games, it's not particularly close how close they've been. They beat a top 20 team at home in Oklahoma, and they did it through their offensive production more than their defensive efficiency. Like, it's...
Really only four players playing well.
Yeah, like it's, you know, if you, yeah, and, you know, as much as I don't want to be one of those, you know, well, if this and if that, consider if Courtney Ramey had even just a decent game, or if Jace Febres hits 38% from three instead of 15%. Like, this game isn't even close. Like, they are closer to playing like a top 10 team than they are like a 50, you know, number 50 team. And they are playing closer and closer to that game by game by game. And they are on what feels to me like an upward trajectory. And I am more optimistic about this team right now than I was 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago, or, you know, in the middle of the Radford, you know, series of games. Like, that section, they seem to be figuring things out and they seem to be optimizing. And that's what I want to see out of a team, you know, in the middle of conference play.
And really fast. And I this is a very self-serving comment, but I would agree with Johnny. Look, when we talked about it last week, Garrett was shooting 19% from three. He hit 3 of 3 against us. That shit's a fluke, right? You know, Mooney was 8 for 10. That shit's a fluke. Bieniemy almost willed his team to win with that. Like, that shit kind of would have been a fluke too. Like, it's not like OU has been counting on him this year. And fluky things happen in every single game, in every single sport. Like, it's just, that's what sports is. It makes it fun and terrible all at the exact same time. But I do think that if you looked at some of these games, even in losing, Texas was playing well enough, generally speaking, with the exception of, I guess, the first half against Oklahoma State, which was just garbage. Yeah. But other than that, they've been playing well enough to win most every game here. And they did win those first couple games, and they did beat OU, but they struggled in a few other ones. Because, and I don't want to say that Tech didn't play well enough to win. Obviously they did. I don't want to say that Kansas didn't play well enough to win. They, you know, they got the points. But if some of those weird things maybe don't happen in a game, which would be nice, and maybe if Texas didn't get screwed by some weird shit, you know, maybe things are different. And I guess I hope that as we move forward, like, Texas probably can't get screwed by weird shit every game. So if they keep on playing pretty well and they don't have, you know, and some people don't play way outside of their normal zone, then maybe Texas can go on a little run here, or they could lose the next five. Like, that's the schedule is not easy moving forward. So I don't want us to be rosy and ridiculous, but I do think objectively they're playing better. I just don't think you can argue that. And especially if people are still harping on Shaka for his offensive production, like, this team offensively has looked pretty darn good the last 2 weeks.
So let's go ahead and get past Oklahoma, as hard as that might be, as much as that might suck. And let's go ahead and take a look in the future and take a look at the next two games Texas has on their plate. That is at TCU and at Georgia. And if you have been following the news at all, you have been seeing player after player leave TCU. It's kind of like football, but instead of it happening after Texas plays them, it is happening before that. So what is happening at TCU? Are they falling apart, and is that going to help out Texas at all? What's the deal there?
I think the answer is no. Like, I can't say that with any real confidence. I don't think they're falling apart. I don't know exactly what's happening there. It's a really odd situation where they have Caden Archie, who was their, I think he was their highest rated recruit ever. He's transferring halfway through his freshman year. Uat Alak, who is, was he not a grad transfer? He's a JUCO guy who came.
He was the number one JUCO center in the country.
Yeah, he's transferred out. Jalen Fisher, who is in my mind sort of the guy who he was the guy who created sort of the ceiling for this team. Like, if he played well, if he was healthy, he was going to help them battle for the top of the conference. He's been dealing with an injury all year, like the after effects of meniscus surgery. He's transferring out. So that's three pretty significant players, if not just for present, for future, that are transferring out. And what's his name? Kwat Noy. He had the flu against Kansas State. He didn't play against them, and they lost against Kansas State. Like, they're just, it's a weird situation for them. And I don't think there's necessarily some larger problem at stake here. Maybe, you know, maybe it's just sort of a confluence of things, because I don't get the sense from TCU people that Jamie Dixon is in trouble or that he's, you know, got an exodus on his hands. It just seems like it's sort of a series of things that all happen in short order that make it appear maybe worse than it is. Having said that, they're still perilously short on depth given the number of guys that they've lost. Those three guys that they lost are all, if not starters, significant role players or guys who are going to play big, you know, down the road. But they're still a solid team. Like, it's sort of, they have a solid starting rotation and they have, you know, five guys who can beat you. They're still, they still shoot well from three. They still push tempo pretty well. Alex Robinson is a very good senior guard who, his assist rate is pretty phenomenal. So they have the ability. You look at, what is it? I think it's, how many guys is it? Like, four guys who are shooting at or better from three than, or three guys, excuse me. One of those is Jalen Fisher. They have three guys who are shooting at or better from three than Jace Febbers is. So they still have the offensive firepower to beat you. And Texas has not won in Fort Worth in 3+ years now. I guess it's since Shaka's been there, they haven't won in Fort Worth. So, This is not an easy game for Texas. This is not a game Texas should be considered favored in. They are going to have to go in and put in, you know, an A-plus effort to come out with a victory on this.
Yeah, I kind of wish our first game against them was at home, and then we could play TCU in a month in Fort Worth when their lack of depth was really giving them trouble. TCU's solid. You know, Jamie Dixon has built his career on that. They're going to defend you, especially at home. They're very tough to beat at home. I think Texas is going to have to really defend very well. I think they're going to have to kind of push tempo without trying to play super fast, if that makes sense. Like, we're going to have to try to kind of play passing lanes. I think they're going to have to try to, you know, figure out some ways to be aggressive and see if they can get some live ball turnovers, because TCU probably will shoot well. That's just kind of who they've been this year so far. And Robinson can really play. I'll be interested to see how we defend Robinson in particular. I think that Kerwin will probably spend a decent amount of his time on him. I hope that we don't have to put Coleman on him too much, because I think that Coleman is probably our most solid, and I don't know if I'd say best, but for sure our most solid perimeter defender. But it does take a lot out of him when he's got to play at that kind of high level on both sides of the floor. So I can't imagine that the TCU program at this point is not feeling the emotional effects of what is transpiring all around them, like players leaving, players getting hurt forever, this team that they thought that they had imploding. And certainly they have a lot to play for. I would be surprised if they're not a tournament team, but that is, I don't see them maintaining what they had been building towards for the first couple of months. And so if Texas can exploit their lack of depth, and if we can exploit some of their struggles with interior defense at this point, okay, all right. Well, I think we're gonna have a good shot against them. But if they kind of stay affirming and positive of like, all right, we're still playing for something. We're still, you know, we're still a team that has some quality shooters and some, you know, some quality playmakers and a very good point guard. You know, they could come out and still feel pretty good, even though their season is sort of crumbling around them.
Yeah, I think with from the Texas perspective, there are certain games that I look at on the schedule, and you know, if I'm sort of ranking the most and least winnable games, this game falls in the lower half, but it's not unreasonable to think that they can win this. And I
it's not at Iowa State, it's not at Texas Tech.
Right. Yeah. Right, exactly. And so I feel like if you are going to be an above 500 team in the Big 12, you have to take advantage of what I've sort of started calling flippable games, which is games that you are the underdog, but you're not like a massive underdog. Like, it's not like walking into the fog. And going into TCU at 6 p.m. on a Wednesday is not exactly murderer's row. I mean, as much as their new arena is nice and their fans are, you know, pretty into things, it's still not, they're all feeling this sort of unease about the season. And so if you can take an away game against a team like TCU, one, it helps in March when you're doing tournament selection. Two, it helps broaden the possible outcomes for your season within the conference. Like, if you're trying to shoot for, let's say, third in the Big 12, this is a game that you should really try to take, because without it, you're looking at, you know, okay, you could still finish 500, maybe, you know, maybe 10-8, maybe 8-10. But if you flip this game, then maybe you're looking at 11-7 instead of 10-8. And it's these sorts of opportunities that you really need to take advantage of. And so I'm hopeful that Texas will take advantage of this opportunity against a team that is maybe a little, you know, I don't want to call them going sideways. I don't think they're imploding, but they're dealing with a lot more adversity than they had anticipated starting the season. And if they can take this game in Fort Worth, that's another good sign of the Texas team starting to really sort of have this upward trajectory.
So then how do you take care of TCU? What is Texas going to need to do to make sure that they take all this bad stuff that's happened to TCU and compound on it?
You have to force those guys off the three-point line. This team is a good three-point shooting team, and I would rather have them making twos than threes, personally, because this is a team that is still good enough at shooting the three, they can bury you from three. And I would rather those guys have to go into the paint and face Hayes or Sims or Osakowski or, you know, even just the man defense of Roach or Coleman or whatever, than to be bombing away from three. That personally, that's what I would like to see them do.
Yeah, it starts on defense for sure. When we've lost at TCU the last few years, it's been, we've been, you know, destroyed. Like, it hasn't been close. And if they come out early and hit some good, you know, perimeter shots or hit, you know, get a streak of like 9 points in three possessions or whatever it would be, it's going to be tough to beat them, because, you know, they're going to ride that wave. They obviously desperately want to beat Texas every time. So I think that it's going to be an interesting first probably 5 to 7 minutes of both halves. And if TCU can win those early parts of both halves, I think Texas will have a hard time playing from behind in a tough environment against some good shooters. If we can either, you know, get up ourselves or force them into some difficult beginnings of halves, I do think that we're going to have the playmakers and the speed to give them problems if we can turn it into kind of more of a, hey, can we execute in the half court? Because, again, we're kind of finding ourselves a little bit as far as, okay, for those top guys, here's how they're going to attack. And so if we can make it into that kind of game and not allow TCU to get up even relatively big in either of those halves, I think we're gonna have a good shot. It's tough to do, though. I mean, TCU's good. they can play and they can really shoot. And when they have their good moments shooting, they have really good moments. So I'm not necessarily calling for a win at all, but there's ways to get that victory.
So again, we're not confident in a win here. I don't think anybody's ever confident in Texas being consistent against teams they should, as you said, beat on the road. So let's just say, how important is this win, or how important or how devastating would it be to lose to TCU here?
Well, devastating, I don't think so. But with anything in conference, you have to... It's tough to say any of that stuff until you see the end result. If they don't win this game, they're going to have to steal something elsewhere. Losing that Texas, losing at home against Tech, losing at Oklahoma State, those are two games that were flipped on us, to use Johnny's terminology. I think like both of those teams probably feel like, oh, we can maybe beat Texas at home if they're the Cowboys, or, oh, we have a chance of winning on the road at Texas if you're Tech. And they did. And so because we lost those games, we're going to have to find somewhere to make those up elsewhere. If we don't make those up elsewhere, then we're not going to have a lot of, we're probably not going to make the tournament in the first place. So this is one of those games where, yes, it is winnable. I don't think it's saying a whole lot to say we can win at TCU given both of the current roster situations. If they don't win this game, is that some kind of like doom and gloom? Well, tell me how they do at home against Kansas. Tell me how they do at Iowa State. Tell me how they do at Baylor. Tell me how they do at home against Baylor. Because those are some games that could make a difference too. So is it important? Very much so, because this is a game that they should win and we have almost no margin for error. If they don't lose, it's not necessarily the end of the world, but we're going to start running out of games where we could say, oh, well, we lost that game, but we can make up for it down the road, because those games are pretty finite.
Yeah, I think I would say that as much as the Oklahoma State loss sucked, we still talked about at the beginning of the season of like this sort of 5-1, 6-0 thing against the bottom three teams, and 5-1 is still in play. Like, that could be the one we dropped. So it sucked, but it is not... it's not the potentially the end of the world. And it's even less so if you can take a game like this where Texas is justifiably the underdog, but not an enormous underdog. So if Texas has designs on anything greater this season, be it the NCAA tournament or trying to get a higher seed than they might otherwise get, this is a game that does a lot to help their resume. So it would not be devastating if they lost, unless, like, you know, Jackson Hayes' leg snapped off in the process, then yes, it's a devastating loss. But, you know, if they go into Fort Worth and put up a good fight and lose by 6 points or something, it's not the end of the world. It's just, as Tim points out, it's a lost opportunity.
So let's go ahead and then take a look at the next game. And it's an SEC team. It's a rematch of the Sugar Bowl. I don't know how much it really is a rematch of the Sugar Bowl, but... it's another game that Texas should win if you look at it on paper. So as soon as I say that, I'm going to knock on wood here, but as soon as I say that, it means probably they're going to lose. So tell me what Georgia is, what the game's going to look like, and how Texas is going to lose this game.
How exactly do they shoot themselves in the foot?
So we've established the floor for winning a game is shooting better than 2 of 22 from 3. So... let's say they shoot 2 of 25. That's how they lose. So Georgia is not good on offense, but they counter it by not being good on defense either. They turn the ball over a lot on offense. They do not force turnovers on defense, and that is not generally a way to win. They also suck worse than Texas at three-point shooting. So there's that. But they don't shoot that many threes, so it's not that big a deal. I mean, the thing is, Tom Crean has a significant rebuilding job on his hands. If he had walked into the Southeast Conference, 5 years ago, maybe this would have been a smoother rebuild because the other teams would not have been rebuilding for the past 3 years or whatever. But he's in the spot he's in, and it kind of sucks for him. And they are... right now, they're 1-4 in conference, and they're getting pantsed by a lot of people. They lost by 46 points to a Tennessee team that is coached by a guy you might have heard of. Really, with Georgia, they've got this guy, Rashawn Hammonds, who is sort of their do-everything guy. He's a 6'8 wing who, if Georgia wins this game, he is the most likely suspect for the reason why they win this game. I am not sure who is going to guard him. I suspect it's going to be some combination of Hayes and Osakowski. Although they've got Claxton inside, so that's maybe who Hayes will get. So it's going to be up to Dylan Osakowski to to limit him if unless they do a lot of help defense or something. If Texas loses this game, it will not be the worst loss of the season, but it won't be terribly far off. Like, they should win this game. Even if only two of the four players we mentioned before play well, they should still be in this game. Like, I don't want them to take this lightly because we saw what happened against Oklahoma State when they take someone lightly. But Texas should definitely be favored in this game, without question.
With as much as Georgia has struggled with ball control, if we can get out in the open floor, that's going to really help us, you know, because that generates points for guys like Coleman and Ramey and of course Roach. So I don't want to pretend to know a ton about Georgia. I watched them play against Florida last weekend, and they looked pretty bad. Because I don't exactly rank Florida particularly highly, and Florida was kind of clearly above where Georgia is at. So we'll see. I do think there is something to the fact that we tend to shoot better when we're away from the Irwin Center. So I think that's something that will be interesting to see if that kind of trend continues. Because if we shoot pretty well against them, that should be good enough, right? So if Kerwin and Matt play well, that should be good enough. Or if Kerwin and Dylan play well, that should be good enough. Or whatever. So I think that it's going to be a game where I wouldn't be surprised if Georgia, like us, is kind of excited to see someone outside of their conference. Okay, we don't have to worry about playing. You know, they don't have to worry about Tennessee or whoever else that game. We don't have to worry about Kansas or Texas Tech that game. So that's kind of a nice breather for both teams. But I do think while they've got an interesting matchup,